Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Olivia's Obscura. I am Olivia, of course, as usual. I host this podcast. And what's crazy is that I think this is episode 29, feeling fine. What's crazy is not that this week is 29. It's that next week will be 30. Something about 30 feels kind of crazy. Like 10 and 20, like, yeah, that made sense. Like, it made sense that my podcast went on for that long. But 30 is, like, really the better half of a year at that point. And there's, you know, very few things that I commit to for that long, especially one that isn't, you know, mandatory. I do this for fun, and I'm proud of myself for committing to something that I do for fun for 30 weeks. And I know I've missed some weeks here and there, but I've also uploaded extras. So I think it evens out to about 30 weeks, I would say. Actually, you know what? Let's just fact check this right now. Let's count from when I started, because the first episode came out on November 6th, which I know is because it's election day and it's also me and Ty's anniversary. We celebrate, well, celebrate is kind of, we use loosely because we're not really like anniversary people like that. Like, we don't really go all out. I celebrate my life and love every single day of my life, okay? And you should too. But, you know, we recognize it. November 6th was the day that we met for the first time because we don't really have a, we don't really remember when we, like, made it official, and it wasn't that significant. Like, the significant day was meeting for the first time because we both, I think, I mean, I kind of, like, knew. I don't know. Looking back, I kind of feel like, yes, I knew from the, when I first met Ty, that he was kind of my person, but maybe not. Like, maybe I wasn't confident that it was gonna go. It's hard, you know, when you, this is so not the point of the podcast. It's like such a sidebar, but it's in the moment, I think probably it was harder for me to visualize like a forever, but it was, it didn't take long for me to like want to be with Ty and just be around him. Because if you know Ty, you know that he's just like fun to be around and like has infectious energy and like just is, yeah, like I, anyway, hi Ty, love you, listening definitely, so supportive. What was I even looking at? Oh, how many weeks it's been since November 6th. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. It'll be 30 weeks to the day on Monday when this episode comes out. So episode 29 is coming out on the 30 week anniversary. So I've actually uploaded, it comes out to more than once a week, all things considered. So yeah, I don't know. Olivia's Obscura is turning 30, flirty, and thriving next week. So please show up and show out for her birthday, okay? I will expect nothing less than a full sleigh. I have a new recording set up today. I usually record sitting at, like, my desk chair at the desk, facing the computer. Because I'm usually, like, looking stuff up and, like, clicking around. You can hear me. Because I know when I edit the podcast and when I listen back, I can hear my mouse clicking and I can hear my keyboard clicking. But today, I don't know. I'm feeling kind of cozy. Like, it was really beautiful and sunny this morning, which I will talk about because I need to. But it, the clouds kind of came in and it got chilly. And so I, like, put on my little cozy sweatshirt and got my fuzzy blanket and like made myself cozy on the couch, and I fed this mic that I use has a pretty long cord. So I fed it from the computer because I record using GarageBand. This is all a very low budget setup, and I'm kind of sitting on the couch with the mic resting on a pillow. Not sure if that's the most stable of surfaces it could be on, but I think that it's going to be just fine. The people are not here for perfection, okay? They really aren't. Happy 1st of June, by the way. I'm recording this on Saturday. And you know, it's Pride Month, okay? Happy Pride Month. Happy Pride Month to all of the gay people in my phone, in my ears, in my real life. I love you. I plan to be paying my respects and celebrating for the entire month of June. And San Diego's Pride, like, festival weekend isn't even until the end of July. So really, I will be celebrating and paying my respects for pushing 2 months, which I think is really excellent. Way to go. But yeah, this is the first episode of Pride Month, and isn't that a delight? You know, be gay, do crimes, protect trans people, free Palestine. Like, are we rocking with that? Are we rocking with be gay, do crime, respect and protect trans people, and free Palestine? I think that is kind of the name of the game. I think that this June, this is going to be a June for our collective liberation, right? We've all heard, like, no one's free until everyone is free. And I think that just because of the increasing, I mean, the conversation regarding the atrocities, the crimes against humanity, like quite literally happening in Gaza, that conversation, at least in my circles on the internet, has been going full-fledged since October 7th, pretty much. But I mean, I have seen it building more mainstream momentum, at least algorithmically, right? I can never say confidently that, like, oh yeah, this thing is picking up traction online, because is it really, or is it just in my circles and my algorithm? You know what I mean? But I do kind of feel like maybe this is optimistic. I don't know. I actually think that optimism is like a tool for our like, how do I say this? I don't know if this is too optimist. I don't want to be too flippant about this. I feel like we are reaching a boiling point as a people, as a society, as Americans, but as a larger collective group of people on this earth. We are, like, it's an election year. I just kind of, like, feel a lot happening. I feel like people are fed up. They're sick of being poor, of being hungry. They're sick of seeing children slaughtered online. We're sick of, you know, the fact that in America, the government is continuing to try to reverse trans rights and queer rights. It's just like, it's ridiculous. And I think that people are generally, not all people, obviously, but like as a people, more of us are coming to realize that. And I feel like we're getting to a tipping point. And I don't know if that is too optimistic, but I do think that in order for me and for all of us to not go fucking crazy, we need to hold on to optimism, right? Like, optimism is a tool for liberation. Joy is a tool for collective liberation. Like, we need to be able to hold two things synchronously. Like, we need to be able to hold on to joy and hold on to grief. You can't really have one without the other. But yeah, speaking of joy, I went on an exceedingly joyful and pleasurable walk today. It was like the most beautiful, perfect spring day. I guess summer, like, it was Memorial Day weekend last week. Like, it is, that's kind of like the start of summer, right? Culturally, I feel. Socially, the start of summer. So we are kind of in summer now. And today, until about an hour ago when the clouds moved in, it was the perfect summer day. I took myself on a little walk. I walked to not one of my like close convenient coffee shops, but I walked to one a little bit further away, like a mile away. Because I was craving the rosemary sea salt bagel from Wholesome Coffee on University in North Park. If you're in San Diego and you haven't had that bagel, I'm going to need you to abort all of your other missions today and divert to Wholesome, okay, to get a bagel. And I get it with the scallion cream cheese. It is a freaking delight. And I thought that I deserved a little treat after completing my chores this morning. Okay, because I did a little bit of cleaning. I did like a polish. What I would refer, I don't know where I picked this term up, and I don't even know if I'm using it correctly, but it is a colloquialism that I know I probably saw online at some point. The concept of a Hollywood clean. I did like a Hollywood clean today. A Hollywood clean, the way I see it and the way I use the word, is like a surface clean, right? Like I took all of the everything off the kitchen counters and I wiped down the bottles and I wiped down the things and I wiped down the counter and I put it back. So it looks really nice and clean. I took everything off of the desk, wiped it down, put it back on. So now it's like sparkling clean. Same with like pretty much every like coffee table, side table, night bedside table. Like that to me, I function as a person when things around me look clean. That's more important to me, and stick with me because I'm going to explain this. That is more important to me than actual, like, cleanliness. And I, because the Hollywood clean exists in opposition to a deep clean. And I do both of those things. Like, I don't want you to think that I don't deep clean my home. Like, I deep clean the kitchen. Well, I don't. Ty, I don't really touch the kitchen. Ty deep cleans the kitchen. I clean the bathroom, okay? I deep clean the bathroom. So it's okay. That's called the division of labor. Get with it. But I do those like more intermittently, you know, like every few weeks, like once a month minimum. But like a quote unquote Hollywood clean, like a surface polish, like a vacuum, a Swiffer, like just things to make it feel clean around me. That is crucial to my well-being. I can't live or work or focus or feel settled if I'm under the impression that I'm in a dirty space. And sometimes I can't explain it. Sometimes I will go to bed at night feeling like it's clean in here, and then I'll wake up in the morning and I'll like step on some cat litter and I'll be like, fuck, this place is a dump, you know? This place is a shithole. I need to clean it. It's not, of course. It's just like, it's so mental for me. And like my well-being and functionality really, really does depend on feeling like I'm in a clean place, right? So if things look dirty, I don't like that. Does that make sense? Like it can't be an either or. Like, well, it can. I feel like people who, because I feel like some people's houses look messy. You know what I mean? Like they might have clutter. And our apartment definitely does have, like, we're a trinket house, right? Like, we have stuff places. Like, we don't have one of those apartments that looks like it could be in a magazine or in AD. Like, we look like we live here and we look like we have a bunch of stuff because, newsflash, we truly do. I love things and stuff and I like to have my creature comforts. I feel like some people have that kind of clutter, maybe like mess in their house, but they do like a lot of deep cleaning. So like frequent deep cleaning. Like I know, I think my mom, at least when me and my sister lived at home, like she cleaned, like deep cleaned the bathroom, like scrubbed the like toilet, like everything like that, like once a week, like everything. Once in the bathroom, sink, toilet, shower, all the bathrooms in our house, because growing, like our house, there was like two bathrooms, 2.5 baths. Okay. Does it really matter how many bathrooms I had growing up? Yes. Okay. That gives you some indication. 4 people using a house of bathrooms does deteriorate the cleanliness of the bathroom more so than now just the 2 of my parents living there. Well, actually, Avery does live there. I guess maybe I could, if I so wanted to, I could reach out to my mother and get some data on how often she cleans the bathroom right now, but I really don't. Anyway, that is like, so I need to stop talking about cleaning the bathroom. Like, this is the most boring content I could possibly be producing right now. But this isn't about producing content, okay? This podcast is about processing things orally and sometimes coming to some kind of personal revelation, but like oftentimes not. And that's okay because it's not about the destination. It's about the friends we make along the way. Anywho, what the fuck was I talking about? Oh my gosh, I was talking about how after I did my chores this morning, my cleaning, I did all my little Hollywood clean this morning. I was feeling amazing. The sun was out. The birds were chirping. I said, I need to get out of this place. I need to blow this popsicle stand. Laced up the old sneakers, went for a walk to Wholesome, got myself a bagel and an iced Americano. Truly delicious, truly delicious. And this walk was euphoric in a way. I love taking a solo walk around the neighborhood on a sunny day with an iced coffee. There are very few things, ailments, queries that can't fix. If I'm kind of like needing a reset during my day, if I'm having a bad day, if I'm feeling sad, if I put on one of my favorite podcasts, or if I put on some music and I go for a walk and get an iced coffee, I am then back in a better headspace, you know? Because sometimes you can't, I don't know if this is just me, but like sometimes I spiral emotionally when I am like just not in a place to be thinking productively. I think probably a lot of people experience this. But definitely me, like I sometimes get so worked up about little things. And I need something to like ground me and get back in perspective so I can just think critically and logically and productively about something. And 99% of the time, I do like a grounding activity I would consider is going for a walk and getting an iced coffee, right? For some people, it might be something different. It might be doing yoga. It might be whatever. For me, it's going for a walk and getting an iced coffee. It's also taking a shower. If I'm feeling cranky, upset, like anything, like if I take a shower, like I emerge from the shower a different woman who can think clearly and process her emotions productively. You know, that would be another grounding activity for me. On a day like today, I was already in a great mood, okay? I had just finished my little cleaning morning, right? I was feeling accomplished. I was feeling incredible. I was feeling the sun on my skin, okay? No one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it in. That goes for sun as well as rain. And right now, it is, well, we're kind of on the end of jasmine season. Spring in San Diego is something that is extraordinarily sacred to me. And it started last year. Last year was, because this is my 2021, 2022, 23, 24. This is my fourth spring living in San Diego, but I really only have like strong memories of it being like a thing starting last year. And I think it might have just had to do with like the weather or the other thing is that last year was the first year that I wasn't working like full time out of the house. So I had time to be taking these like long meandering walks during the middle of the day, right? So that is definitely it. I had never correlated those two things before, but that is kind of why I think last year spring emerged as such a high point in the year. For me, like, it's the novelty of it for sure, because I find I'm not from like a landscape like this, right? Like growing up in Portland, we didn't have the bougainvillea, we didn't have jacarandas, we didn't have the, is it jacaranda or is it jacaranda? I've heard people say jacaranda, but that just feels so insane to me. Like it's unfathomable that it would be pronounced with a hard J like that. Excuse me if I'm mispronouncing it, but I'm going to go with jacaranda until I hear otherwise. If someone would like to fact check that one for me, please by all means do. You have the bougainvillea, the jacaranda, you have the jasmine, the California poppies, beautiful wildflowers, like just the most extraordinary spring blooms here that I didn't see in Portland. And I think it's funny because the other day, me and Montana were walking by this beautiful bush of bougainvillea that was like completely encasing the patio it was growing around. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what a sight to behold. Like, you know, there are cathedrals everywhere for those with the eyes to see. You know what I mean? And Montana was like, ooh, yeah, like I just haven't like, I don't really like bougainvillea. Like it's just kind of ugly to me. And I'm like, what? It's beautiful. Like if you look at my camera roll right now, like it is like just so many pictures of like bougainvillea bushes and the spring blooms around here. But it's funny because I'm sure that she would go spend time in the Pacific Northwest during spring, and she would be enchanted by the foliage and flora there during this time of year. So it is purely a novelty thing. Like, I do just love it because I do really romanticize. This is something that I was thinking about earlier, as I was on my walk, is that I still really romanticize living in San Diego. Like, I feel like enchanted and magical when I'm walking through the neighborhood and I see the beautiful flowers and I see the palm trees contrasting with the blue sky. Like, I'm like, this is it. Like, this is California dreaming. Like, I am living the life. Who would have thought, like, if I would have told my, like, 18-year-old self, like, fresh out of high school, that I would be living here and this would be my life, I wouldn't believe it, because that was just, like, so far, like, I didn't even consider the fact that I would ever be living in Southern California, and I just, like, love it. Like, it is, like, it's so cheesy, but, like, every time that I drive into LA, I'm like, ooh, the city of dreams. I'm like, how fantastic is this? Like, how magical is it to be in Los Angeles, the city of dreams? You know, like, I still am very much charmed by the SoCal lifestyle. But yeah, spring here in San Diego specifically is like, oh my God, it is like a rebirth of sorts. And it's like everything just comes when the blue sky is out, the sun is shining, the flowers are like these colors that you can't even believe exist in nature. Like this like neon fuchsias and like, oh my God, like I saw this beautiful sunflower today. And I honestly, like, it's gonna sound like I was like tripping balls when I was on this walk, but I wasn't. I was just enjoying the colors and the sights and the smells of my walk completely sober, okay? And what's wrong with that? And what's wrong with that? Yeah, anywho. I don't know. I just realized that I might have been, I just checked the mic levels and I think that I maybe have been yelling a little bit. Like, I think the audio might have peaked, but if that's the case, I sincerely apologize. I hope that it's better moving forward. And if not, then that's not my business. And I'm really sorry. I don't, again, this is a low budget operation. This is for me, myself, and I. And should you choose to step into within the borders of obscure nation, I hope that you're on board for whatever we do here. And if not, then that's okay. Like, if the audio bugs you or something, like, I totally will not be offended if you leave, okay? That is just, I needed to do a mandatory disclaimer, okay? Because, well, we're blowing up. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not. But today, my third episode to reach 100 downloads, reached 100 downloads. So now I have 300 download episodes. My most downloaded episode, or like surpass 100 downloads, I should say. So I have 3 episodes now that have surpassed 100 downloads, which is crazy. Like, most of them hover in the like 40 to 60 range, depending on when they came out. But my most popular episode is the Caroline Calloway Timeline Part 1. My second most downloaded is Dumb Heteronormative Gossip, where I go over the Lord Jack Antonoff relationship timeline, alleged relationship timeline, excuse me. And then the most recent one to surpass 100 downloads is This Is Your Captain Speaking, which is my first episode. And I like that. I like that people like want to go back and listen to the first episode. I think that maybe a lot of people just listened to that one and then decided to jump ship, because obviously not every one of my episodes has that amount of downloads. But yeah, so anyway, I just feel like it was kind of shocking to see like, oh, like there's 3 different of my episodes that have been downloaded 100 times. Like, also, we just reached collectively as Obscure Nation 1,600 total downloads across my entire catalog. So 1,600, not people, because I'm sure a lot of those are repeat listeners, because I know I have a small but dedicated group of Obscura heads who are here every week. I just want to say, you know who you are. If you're you, I so appreciate you being here. This is so gratuitous, and I know that nobody has to listen, and I am so, so glad that you choose to spend an hour of your Monday or whatever you listen, listening to me. You know, like, that's all I could ever hope for. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I just feel the need to, like, give a disclaimer. Like, if you are a newer listener and you do think that my, like, audio and production is shit, I know. I know I kind of think that the lo-fi vibe is part of the charm of this whole ordeal. And if you don't like it, then I'm so sorry that I couldn't provide that for you. I hope you find someone else who will serve you better. Anyway, when I was on my walk today, I saw what I consider to be an extremely good omen. What is the meaning of a good omen? It is a sign that something good or bad is about to happen. But I have very specific things in my life that I consider to be good omens, like signs of good luck, good fortune. One of those things is when I see a Subaru Baja. You rarely see them. They haven't made them in years. The Subaru continued the Baja in April of 2006. So they have not made these cars in 18 years. And so seeing one is really a sight to behold. If you don't know what a Subaru Baja is, it's like, it looks like a Subaru Forester with a pickup truck bed, kind of like a little tiny micro pickup truck bed, but with the front of a Subaru Forester. They absolutely slap. They're the coolest cars in existence. I don't even like cars, and I don't even have a car. I don't even drive. But a Subaru Baja, again, it's so novel. That feeling of novelty is something that I keep coming back to because I really derive like a lot of pleasure from novelty, it turns out, as I'm kind of like talking through this, it seems. But seeing one is like always is so delightful because you just don't see that car very often. I saw more of them living in Oregon because Oregon as a state, the Subarus per capita in the Pacific Northwest at large is, I would say, significantly higher than the Subarus per capita in San Diego, most definitely. I would say the Subarus per capita could maybe only be rivaled by like Vermont or New England. Oregon, extremely high Subaru per capita. So I did see more Subaru I did see more Subaru Bajas in Oregon, but still not a lot. Like they were still extremely infrequent, rare sightings. Today on my walk, on my already incredible walk, on my way home, I did see a Subaru Baja, and it was just amazing. It was amazing to know that, to me, not to sound crazy, I kind of feel like I sound crazy on this episode of the podcast. I hope you guys don't think that I'm experiencing some kind of spiritual psychosis. I assure you I'm fine. I'm actually just like experiencing joy and wonder. I hope that's okay with you guys. I felt like seeing that Subaru Baja really was the seal of like, the universe has my back today. Oh my God. If this podcast ever blows up for real, I so want to do the universe has my back as merch with a picture of a Subaru Baja on it. I just think that would go, maybe I'll just make it. Who the fuck cares? Like, why do I need to sell it? Why can't I just make it for myself? I think I will. That's the amazing thing about free will, is that you can just make a t-shirt if you want to. To quote the banana breath lady in I Think You Should Leave, the most recent season, I'm gonna do the t-shirts. Anyway, I would be curious though, if anyone listening right now has any good omens in their life that for maybe a reason, or there's not even a reason that I consider a Baja to be such a good sign. It just kind of is. Like, it just is. It's something that I guess have been noticing. Like, every time I've noticed a Subaru Baja my whole life, like, it's just kind of always been an event, you know? Like, how awesome. Like, what a crazy car that no one has, you know? And I'm wondering if anyone else has really specific good omens like that that they see. I'm going to make if you're a Spotify listener, I'm going to make the question box for this episode. I'm going to make the question, do you have any good omens in your life? So if you are so inclined to share, please do. I will publish them to the episode page so everyone can see. I'm really trying to get y'all to utilize the Spotify question box, okay? And I think maybe the reason people aren't digging on it really is, first of all, I don't really think that people know it's there. Like, I do think that you're going to hear this and register it, but when you're done listening to this episode, you're not going to go to the episode page and scroll down and see the question box. You're just going to go right into the next thing on your queue. So it's not very intuitive. But also, I think that I have not been asking the right questions, because the standard default prompt in the Spotify question box is, what did you think of this episode? And I don't think that really gets at the heart of what I want to get. Like, that's not a conversation starter in the way that I really want it to be a conversation starter, because I feel like people feel like, first of all, I feel like for some reason that question elicits a negative answer. What did you think about this episode? Well, it's kind of like I'm gonna call it like the Yelp theory, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like so many places that have bad reviews on Yelp, it's not because they're a bad establishment, it's because the loud minority of people who had a bad experience at that place decided to write a review. Like, you feel more compelled to write a review for some place if you've had a very poor experience there than you do when you've had a really good experience there. So I kind of feel like asking, what did you think of this episode? It kind of implores people who don't like the episode to say something. Personally, no one ever says that to me, because I know that this podcast is perfect and everybody loves it. But I know that that could be a problem for some other people. So I think moving forward, the question boxes will, I am going to change it from the default prompt to something very specific. Because people love specificity. They love a specific question. The more specific the question, the easier it is to answer. Answering broad, open-ended questions is very tricky. And I mean, that's why it's really hard to be a good interviewer. Like, celebrity interviewer, journalist, anyone who interviews anybody, whether it's for like entertainment purposes or journalistic purposes, that's a really extreme skill. And some people don't have that skill. They're not asking the right questions. And so I'm taking my journalistic duty as the as the host of this podcast to ask the right leading questions to elicit the proper response from my audience of tens, one might even say dozens. Okay, let's talk about some of the media that I've consumed this week, okay? Starting off, Montana made me watch this movie that she had seen and loved a couple days ago. It was called I Care a Lot, starring the one, the only, Rosamund Pike. It is like a Netflix original movie. I had never heard of it before, and I really enjoyed it. It was a very enjoyable watch, and it was a real hidden gem. Like, I would have never watched it if Montana had not stumbled across it one day when she was sick and then put me onto it. But essentially, it's Rosamund Pike plays this grifter who runs this caretaking business for elderly people. And basically she like convinces the court and she convinces the court that old people need a guardian, like a legal guardian, because they're incapable of taking care of themselves. And then she goes and auctions off their house, sells their belongings, pockets the money. And in this case, like, the plot of the movie centered around one specific patient or client that didn't have any living family, or so she thought, had never been married, was sitting on a big nest egg, a lot of money, a beautiful house, but was in all respects in good health and of sound mind. But basically, like, Rosamund Pike's grift in the movie was that she and the town doctor worked together. So the doctor would write like a fraudulent note or a fraudulent report that a patient wasn't capable of returning home and living independently, and then hand them off to Rosamund Pike's business, where then they, you know, went on to put these patients into care facilities and bleed them dry of all of their money. And at first, it gave me a bad feeling, right? Like at first, because old people make me sad. And the plot of this movie centered around this one particular old woman who lived in this beautiful house and had this beautiful life and was then placed into a care facility, like, against her will. And it was crazy how people did that. And it's crazy because the movie, like, took her phone away, wouldn't let her contact the outside world, like, basically put her in a – convinced everyone around her, convinced the court that she was suffering from dementia and memory loss and couldn't take care of herself, even though she totally could. And because old people have, like, no rights in this country, like, really, you guys? Like, elderly people in America, that's the only perspective I can speak from because I'm an American. Old people in America essentially have the same amount of rights as babies sometimes. Like, it is crazy to me, and that's why old people make me sad, is because maybe they wouldn't make me sad if we didn't leave them to starve and live in squalor and be abused by the people in their life. You know what I mean? Like, or be put into care facilities. Like, it just like old people just make me sad. You know what I mean? The fate of a lot of old people in this country makes me really sad. Like, we do not value old people, and this movie, like, showed what can happen because we don't value old people and we don't view them as people with, like, rights and the ability to defend themselves, so on so forth, blah blah blah. But essentially the movie turned out, I mean, I loved it. It involved the Russian mafia. It had this promising young woman quality about it that me and Montana both agreed on, that, like, it gave us the same feel. Like, it had the same kind of vibe as Promising Young Woman. Totally different story, totally different plot, different commentary, different thesis. Like, it's just a completely different movie, but the feeling, like, something about it, like, really reminded us of Promising Young Woman, and we love Promising Young Woman. So, yeah, recommend that if you are looking for, like, a hidden gem movie. I really liked it. As far as music goes this week, I've been diving into the most recent Maggie Rogers release, Don't Forget Me. I think she maybe released it in March or April. And I gave a couple songs a listen when it first came out, but it didn't really hold me. That's okay. Albums come to me when they're meant to. I went back and listened to it because Ty, he does, if you listen to Ty's episode all the way to the end, you would know that he does live music photography in and around San Diego. And last week, Maggie Rogers' tour stopped in San Diego, and Ty shot that show. And he took these amazing videos and pictures of Maggie Rogers. Follow Ty Fox Photo on Instagram. They're on there. Also TikTok, I think he posted the Maggie pictures, same handle, Ty Fox Photo. The pictures and videos were, like, so Maggie Rogers is such a breathtakingly beautiful person and an absolutely captivating performer. And the pictures themselves, I was like, and the videos he was sending me from the show, I was like, okay, it's time. Like, it's time to listen to the Maggie Rogers album. Favorites, my favorites. It Was Coming All Along, love it. Drunk, love it. So Sick of Dreaming, love it. Those are the first three tracks on the album. An extremely strong first three tracks. I love them. The other one that I have had on repeat is The Kill and also Don't Forget Me. That's, like, half of the songs on the album, but I really, really like those. I've also randomly been listening to the Challengers original score a lot. Yesterday, I listened to it for, like, 3 hours in the afternoon when I was, like, doing stuff on Canva. it's, like, music that I want to listen to when I'm, like, locking in. I listened to it this morning when I was doing some of my cleaning. Like, it's such good ambient music. I said to Montana yesterday, I was like, I was listening to this Challenger soundtrack all day, and she was like, oh my god, like, that would make me kill myself. Like, that sounds like a nightmare. I don't want that music in my ears when I'm doing ambient tasks. And I'm like, I get that. I really do. And it's funny because I'm not like an electronic music person. I'm not like a club beats person. But I fucking love the Challenger score. Like, I find it to be so entrancing. Entrancing is the word. It like puts me into a trance. My favorite song right now on the soundtrack is The Signal. I love that one. The whole score is phenomenal. I love that they did an original score for the movie. Like, I think it's amazing. Ty was telling me last night that I need to watch The Social Network. I've never seen The Social Network. The only thing I know about it is that Armie Hammer is in it as twins, which is spooky and scary if you really want to go there. But he told me that the soundtrack was also done by Trent Reznor, and he did the Challenger score along with Atticus Ross. I don't know who Atticus Ross is, but I know Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails fame, okay? I don't listen to Nine Inch Nails, but boy, oh boy, do I need the Challenger's score up my ass. Headphones are not enough. I need this music up my ass. There, I said it. Last night, all of us, me, Ty, Brooke, Montana, Brooke's boyfriend, all went to see Queef Jerky. Do y'all fuck with Queef Jerky? I don't listen to their music, but I'm very familiar with Queef Jerky, familiar with their presence online, obviously, familiar with Dev Lemons. It's actually funny because I found out about Queef Jerky through watching Dev Lime's YouTube channel, which is her YouTube channel name. Like, Dev Lemons is a singer. She releases her own solo work. She also has a YouTube channel where she does like YouTube commentary, like kind of on the music industry. And she also does these really fun videos where she recreates songs without hearing them. So she'll be like, I recreated, I can't even think of a song. I recreated Espresso without hearing it when I was recording it. I don't know. I just find her content on there to be like fun and unique. So I found her on there, and then I was introduced to Queef Jerky and her bandmate, Nick Green, and like, it's very much like bit-oriented kind of like, I don't want to even call it meme music because it's like not, but it is like very much like bit-oriented joke music. But it goes unironically very hard. If you are unfamiliar with Queef Jerky, I would say that Pineapple Upside Down is the song you would want to start with and maybe end with. Like, maybe that's the only song you want to listen to. That will give you an all-encompassing vibe of their music if you listen to Pineapple Upside Down. That's the song they closed out the show with last night during their encore. It slayed. Dev Lemons and Nick Green, both like really excellent performers. I the show went unnecessarily hard, right? Because like, I wasn't so sure like if it was gonna be a joke or like the show was gonna be a bit, and like it kind of was a bit, and I liked that, but it was, the talent was there, like the vocal chops were there, the drumming chops were there, like it was so good. But also like, it was hilarious because Dev Lemons like brought out this guitar that she like pretended to play, like obviously pretended to play. Like, it wasn't that she was pretending to play it, trying to pass it off as real guitar playing. Like, it was truly there as like a theatrical prop. And I just love that. Like, I love, they're really doing something different, and you have to respect it even if you don't like it. I respect people's ability to make a choice. You know, I've said this before on this podcast. My political platform is really that I believe in people to make choices. I think it boils down to that. Okay, I don't know. This is like so off topic, but I just thought of it. Can I just say that I didn't know until like last week that Mia Goth is married to Shia LaBeouf? Why, as someone who is very plugged in to pop culture, celebrity news, celebrity relationships, why didn't I know that? Really, really weird. And okay, so we need to talk about this for a second. I'm back at the computer. This is serious business, okay? We need to pull up. We need to hack into the mainframe here for a sec. Let me get my tabs pulled up. Let me get my tabs pulled up. What do you guys think of that song? I wrote it on the spot just for you. Shia LaBeouf recently made a return, or tried to make a return, into kind of the public eye. But basically, he was at the Cannes Film Festival this year, like a couple weeks ago, like end of, like maybe last week. I don't know. Shia LaBeouf, if you are not aware, is a hugely abusive, manipulative piece of shit guy who beat the shit out of his ex, FKA Twigs. FKA Twigs sued him in December of 2020 for the abuse that he committed against her. Trigger warning, not sure if it's too late for that. Anyway, the minute I mentioned Shia LaBeouf's name, that should have acted as a trigger warning, okay? But basically, in the lawsuit, she claimed that he tried to choke her on multiple occasions, that he threw her against a car while at the gas station, that he tried to strangle her, that he was being emotionally and physically abusive to her. I also can't remember this, but I know that, I don't know if he did this to FKA Twigs or if it was a previous partner, but he also has given people incurable STDs in the past. Like, all around, a bad guy, abusive towards women, was extremely abusive towards his ex, is riddled with controversy. And basically, he kind of showed up at the Cannes Film Festival like everything was normal and okay, and people were kind of like, we like didn't really forget what you did. We didn't really forget or forgive. Why are you here right now? He was there for the premiere of his upcoming movie Megalopolis. I've never heard of it. Evidently, it is starring Adam Driver and Aubrey Plaza. But yeah, I mean, it is so crazy that people will literally, like, this is why when people want to bitch and moan about cancel culture, I find it to be annoying and dumb. Cancel culture, like, doesn't exist. Like, Shia LaBeouf, who was sued by his ex-girlfriend in 2020, only 4 years ago, not even 4 years ago to the day, because that happened in December, if I recall correctly, of 2020. She sued him for physical battery, emotional abuse, being choked, strangled, thrown up against a car, hit, beat. Like, that can all happen, and Shia LaBeouf can still come back in the year of 2024 in a movie, at a film premiere, still getting work in Hollywood. Like, if cancel culture was real and it actually had consequences, Shia LaBeouf would not be able to work anymore. He would not be able to be in movies anymore. He would not be able to publicly show up at the Cannes Film Festival as though he's done nothing wrong. Sorry, Shia LaBeouf, public enemy number one, tied with James Franco and Kevin Spacey. They can all rot in hell. I'm reading from a People magazine article. LaBeouf's last major red carpet appearance was on February 9th, 2020. Ooh, that fateful pre-COVID time, geez. When he appeared at the 92nd Annual Academy Awards to present the Oscar for Best Live Action Short Film along his Peanut Butter Falcon co-star Zach Gottsagen. Hope I pronounced that correctly. For LaBeouf, the film marks his first role since starring in the 2020 biopic Padre Pio, which was released months before former girlfriend FKA Twigs filed the lawsuit against him, accusing him of sexual battery and relentless abuse. In February 2021, after the singer, 36, alleged the Transformers actor sexually and physically assaulted and battered her, LaBeouf sought inpatient treatment and parted with his agency, CAA, as he took a hiatus from acting. A year later, in August 2022, the actor spoke out against reports that he was fired from Don't Worry, Darling by actor Olivia Wilde, sorry, by director Olivia Wilde during filming, which started production in October of 2020. In a report from Variety, he denied he was fired and claimed he, quote, quit the film due to lack of rehearsal time on August 17th of that year. Well, Wilde asserted that the actor was let go because his acting process did not help create a safe, trusting environment on set. My failings with Twigs are fundamental and real, but they are not the narrative that has been presented, LaBeouf told Wilde, 40, in an email obtained by the outlet. There is a time and a place to deal with such things, and I'm trying to navigate a nuanced situation with respect for her and truth, hence my silence. Okay, so, yeah, like, I mean, he disappeared for 2 years and has just been able to waltz back onto the red carpet in Cannes, like, no problem. It happens. So many pieces of shit dudes have done this. Louis C.K. did this. Louis C.K. has done it. Got, quote unquote, so many people have done this. If you think cancel culture is real, there is a real pattern to prove that it is not. You are, like, especially a white guy, a white man, can do the most horrible atrocities and then disappear for 2 or 3 years, maybe even less, and then come back. And it will, for the most part, be fine. Louis C.K. did this. Army Hammer kind of did this and is, like, kind of, I feel like we're kind of right now in the beginning of the Army Hammer comeback. Like, I could just think of so many men who specifically it has come out that they have done crimes and then they leave the public eye for a little bit and come back like nothing happened. Freaking crazy. But yeah, I need to know the Mia Goth, Shia LaBeouf relationship timeline. She is 30. He is 37. They have a kid together. They welcomed a daughter in 2022. Oh my God, why don't I know anything? First of all, I really truly thought until very recently that Mia Goth was like 25, 26 years old. Max, like, I can't believe that she's 30. She has kind of a young presence and face. I don't know, like, I don't know. Anyway, I'm back on people.com, okay? The trustworthiest of sources. Only the best here at Obscura Pod. This is the Shia LaBeouf, Mia Goth timeline. Shia LaBeouf, apparently their marriage was never legalized. They got married in Las Vegas in 2016. But apparently it was not a real wedding, like a legal union. Anyway, here we go. 2012 is when they meet for the first time, filming Nymphomaniac Volume 2. Never seen it. Never seen Nymphomaniac. Never seen Transformers. Don't plan on it. But I do like the Transformers lore. Sounds like a terrible set to work on. And I will never forgive them. I will never forgive Michael Bay for the crimes he committed against Megan Fox. Okay? I won't forgive or forget. November of 2013, Mia Goth stars in a music video that Shia LaBeouf directed. A music video by the band Future Unlimited. For their single Haunted Love. So I've never seen that or heard of that. Apparently, Mia Goth is in this video. She's crying and giving birth in a bathtub. And this is a quote from Shia LaBeouf. "When I think domestic, I feel love," he told The Hollywood Reporter about his inspiration for the video. "When I think violence, I feel haunted. Haunted Love for me was about lovers pushing each other to the edge and how jealousy can make a person snap." Guys, I'm scared of him. I'm scared of Shia LaBeouf. October 19th, 2014, they make their red carpet debut as a couple. I don't quite know what the event was. Oh, closing night of the European premiere gala red carpet. Oh, for Fury in 2014, a movie that I'm not familiar with. A 2014 American war film written, directed, and co-produced by David Ayer. It stars Brad Pitt with Shia LaBeouf and Logan Lerman and Scott Eastwood, which if you listen to my episode, you will... The episode, I believe it's called Sipping on Celebrity. You can hear my story about how I served Scott Eastwood coffee once upon a time when I worked at a coffee shop. So, yeah. Anyway, so that is where Mr. LaBeouf and Mia Goth make their red carpet debut, this gala for the Fury movie. March 2015, Mia Goth sparks engagement rumors with a new ring. The actress first sparked rumors that she and LaBeouf were engaged when she showed off a sparkly new rock on her ring finger at Paris Fashion Week. Okay, so if she's 30... right now, and I'm sorry, I don't want to be, I know that people think that Gen Z is like uptight about age gaps, and so if y'all don't mind, I'm going to be uptight about age gaps for a second. I just want to calculate this because I'm concerned. In 2024, she is 30. In 2015, that would make her 21, right? We would make Shia LaBeouf 28, if he's 7 years older than her. That's not sitting right with my soul. I really think that a 21-year-old girl and a 28-year-old man have very little to be talking about, very little reason to be entering a relationship together, especially Shia LaBeouf, who, as we've come to find out, you know, today, is spooky and scary. I don't like that. I don't like that she was 20, 21, and he was 27, 28. It's not good. It's not feeling good to me. July 24th, 2015. So a few months after the engagement rumors, Shia LaBeouf and Mia Goth get into a heated altercation. The pair made headlines after getting into a public argument in Germany in July of 2015. A video originally shared by Entertainment Tonight captured them yelling at each other outside of a taxi near a hotel. LaBeouf is heard telling a group of German men, "I don't want to touch a woman, I don't want to hit a woman, but I'm being pushed." After, "I don't want to touch a woman, I don't want to hit a woman, but I'm being pushed?" Oh my God, okay. Blaming your girlfriend for you beating her up is probably the furthest thing from a slay that I can imagine. Lock him up. How can someone tell me how I can both be a prison abolitionist and want Shia LaBeouf locked up forever? Can someone help me with that? Thank you. After accepting a ride from the men to the airport, he can also be saying, quote, "If I'd have stayed there, I would have killed her." Lock him up, throw away the key. March 2016, Mia Goth sparks engagement rumors once again. 1 year after first being spotted with the ring on her engagement finger, Goth stepped out once again wearing the sparkler. She and LaBeouf shared a lunch date and later both declined to comment on the engagement rumors. October 10th, 2016, Shia LaBeouf and Mia Goth have a marriage ceremony in Las Vegas. What appeared to be a marriage ceremony provided over by an Elvis Presley impersonator in a Las Vegas chapel. The ceremony was live streamed, prompting many to wonder whether it was the actor's latest performance art piece. We need to collectively as a society prohibit men from participating in performance art. It's a disease, it's a cancer, it needs to stop. Both of their mothers were in attendance at this wedding. Later, local officials confirmed that the nuptials were not legally binding. A couple of days after the news broke, Clark County of Nevada posted on X, formerly Twitter, "Our records show no marriage license for Shia LaBeouf and Mia Goth. A commitment ceremony was performed in Vegas." A few days later, October 18th, 2016, Shia LaBeouf says he's proud of his wedding, blah, blah, blah. The plan was for it to be a private deal. He revealed part of the package, the King Tut package, you get a live stream for free. He noted that they declined the offer, but things didn't go as planned. Sure. We get home and it's like, "Whoa, hey, listen, something changed," he recalled. "So I called them up and they said someone pressed the wrong button that sends the video to TMZ." "I'm sorry, I twipped and I hit the button that sent the video to TMZ. I'm sorry, I don't know how that happened." That is so me if I worked at the wedding chapel in Vegas. I had no idea. I accidentally pressed the button that sent this to TMZ. I'm sorry. September 25th, 2018, they file for divorce. So 2 years and change after this quote-unquote wedding, LaBeouf's rep confirmed to People that the couple were calling it quits, referring to the split as amicable. The separation is amicable, and all details pertaining to the divorce proceedings will remain private, the rep said. November 6, 2018, Shia LaBeouf and FKA Twigs are spotted kissing. 2 months after they were first seen together, the Even Stevens alum and the Good to Love singer were seen kissing in Los Angeles. The couple... Okay, that's not funny. That's not what I'm laughing at. I'm laughing at because I love when magazines describe actors as like their projects, like the Even Stevens alum, the Good to Love singer. Like, it's really funny what they choose to put as that descriptor. When I was in Palm Springs in February, I was like in line at the Vons or the Ralphs or whatever. And I was flipping through one of the tabloids because flipping through a tabloid at the grocery store checkout is one of the last pleasures that we can really have in this world. Like, bring back magazines is all I'm saying. I made a TikTok about this a couple weeks ago of like, I miss magazine culture. Like, when I was a teenager, I would absolutely tear the fuck up a magazine, a Teen Vogue, a 17, sure. But I also really loved the magazines that were not targeted towards my age group whatsoever. I read Good Housekeeping, Women's Day, Real Simple, the magazines that my mom and grandma subscribed to. In the magazine, it had a picture of Harry Styles like riding a bike, because one thing about Harry Styles is you can bet your ass he is going to be riding a city bike. Okay, that man is keeping city bike in fucking business. We love to see it. An environmental king riding that fucking bike. I have to find it. I know I took a picture of it. Okay. I found the picture I took. It's a picture of Harry Styles on the city bike in London in February. They refer to him as the Live While We're Young singer. Harry Styles, the Live While We're Young singer, was spotted cruising around town on an electric bike. Okay. It's not like Harry Styles has literally released 3 solo albums since leaving One Direction, since One Direction has no longer been a band, and they credit him as singing a One Direction song. I just think it's hilarious. Like, there are so many other more relevant things to describe Harry Styles as. I'm just like fascinated by who chooses the descriptors for celebrities in like gossip rags like these. I just think it's so funny. Anyway, the couple dated for over a year. That would be Twigs and Shia LaBeouf. And FKA Twigs later alleged that LaBeouf had sexually and physically assaulted her during their relationship. She later filed a lawsuit against him. Okay, we went over that already, right? We know what that, we already did that. We're fast forwarding again now from November of 2018 to March of 2020. March 2020, Shia LaBeouf and Mia Goth spark reconciliation rumors. 2 years after their split, the American Honey actor and ex-star appeared to have reunited. There we go again, American Honey actor and ex-star. The pair were seen cozying up while out and about, and notably, both were pictured wearing wedding bands, with Goth sporting a diamond ring as well. Okay, the article that I'm reading, like the timeline that I'm reading on People, has a picture of Mia Goth and Shia LaBeouf on a run together in Los Angeles. And Shia LaBeouf is like shockingly scary looking in this picture. Like, ignore everything that we know about him as a person that would make him scary. Appearance only, I'm spooked. He has a very scary full stomach tattoo, like basically covering like from his sternum all the way down, like it goes beneath the waistband of his pants. I can't quite see what it is in this picture, but you bet that I'm gonna go look it up. I have to know what it is. I can see though the letters spelling out creep across his torso right above his belly button. What is Shia LaBeouf? How do you spell this motherfucker's name? You could have a gun to my head and tell me to spell Shia LaBeouf's name and I'd be dead. Okay, he got his whole chest and stomach tattooed for his role in The Tax Collector, which again is a movie I've never heard of. Like, I am just clearly not familiar with Shia LaBeouf the way that some people are. The actor went all in for his portrayal of a tax collector working for a crime lord in the upcoming crime thriller. He went so far as to channel his character in the upcoming film. He even got his entire chest tattooed for the role. Criminalize method acting. Say it with me. Criminalize method acting. Criminalize method acting. There is no reason he has to be doing all that. No reason. Okay, in the movie, his name is Creeper. So obviously, as any sane, normal person would do, he decided to get that permanently tattooed on him forever. This is coming from someone who has some goofy ass tattoos, okay? I have a pinup cowgirl frog taking up the entirety of the front of my right thigh. But I draw the line at getting your entire front tattooed for a movie, especially when it has to say Creeper on it. And you are a creepy, emotionally, physically abusive piece of shit. You know, like, I guess it all works out in the end, doesn't it? Back to the timeline. April 15th, 2020, Shia LaBeouf and Mia Goth appear to be social distancing together. They were spotted on a walk together in LA amid the COVID-19 pandemic, again, both sporting their wedding bands. December 21st, 2020, Shia LaBeouf... Wait, this is tea. Shia LaBeouf is seen kissing Margaret Qualley, Jack Antonoff's wife. Okay. By December 2020, it seemed like the couple had called it quits once again. Soon after LaBeouf was sued by his ex, FKA Twigs, for alleged abuse, the actor was seen kissing actress Margaret Qualley, with whom he'd recently starred in a music video for the song Love Me Like You Hate Me. His and Qualley's romance was short-lived, with news of their split coming just a month later. Now that I read that out loud, I feel like maybe I did know that, and I was equally as shocked the first time I learned that. Also, totally off topic, but there's this movie coming out called Kinds of Kindness. It's starring Emma Stone, many other people, but two of the most notable ones are Margaret Qualley and Joe Alwyn. Will I be sat for that movie? 100%. I really want to know, like, the inter-friend group dynamics between like Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn and this orbit of people that hang out with them both, because Jack Antonoff, best friends with Taylor Swift, is married to Margaret Qualley, who worked with Joe Alwyn on this film. Like, our actors, both British, I think, like, in the same circle. Like, how, I just, like, want to know, because I'm nosy and I like the drama and I like the tea and I like the gossip, I just, like, want to know how that goes down. Like, I just want to know what's going on. I want to know how they interact. Like, do Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn still, like, do they still end up in the same room occasionally? Like, I don't know. I almost feel like, wait a second, now I'm trying to put together, because I feel like the song I Look in People's Windows is one of the few songs on there that is, like, distinctly about Joe Alwyn, in my opinion. I wonder if I Look in People's Windows, like, I'm thinking that maybe I Look in People's Windows is not literal. Like, I look in people's windows, what if your eyes looked up and met mine one more time? Like, I wonder if that's because they kind of, like, exist in the same orbit but don't really overlap. Or if she, like, sees him tagged in people's Instagram posts that she follows. Like, I don't know. You know that I love to speculate. You know that I love to think about Taylor Swift more than I should. I just wonder. Anyway, back to the timeline once again. June 6th, 2021. Shia and Mia ride bikes together, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. June 21st, 2021, they go on a date to Disneyland. Just weeks after their afternoon bike ride. Really riveting stuff here, folks, right? January 28th, 2022, Mia Goth debuts a baby bump. She stepped out in Pasadena, California, showing off a first glimpse at her growing baby bump. The Pearl Star dressed casually for the occasion, wearing black leggings and Birkenstocks. Okay, Slay Queen. March 14th, 2022, shows off her baby bump once again with Shia LaBeouf. They were photographed walking arm in arm through a park in Pasadena. Okay, whatever. April 2nd, 2022, they welcome their daughter. They were spotted pushing a stroller around Pasadena in early April 2022. The pair did not publicly announce their baby news at the time and revealed no information about their new addition, sex, or birth date. August of 2022, Shia LaBeouf confirms he and Mia Goth welcomed a daughter, shared the first details about his newborn in a letter to his former Don't Worry Darling director Olivia Wilde, published by Variety. It all comes full circle. It all comes back to Don't Worry Darling. I miss the Don't Worry Darling drama so much. That was so fun. The spitting on Chris Pine of it all, like, what a moment, you know what I mean? In the letter, the actor, who disputed that he was fired from the film, confirmed that he and Goth welcomed a daughter and were rebuilding their relationship. Well, I would hope you're rebuilding your relationship if you're actively parenting a kid together, but call me crazy. Call me old-fashioned. I have a little girl, Isabel. She's 5 months old and just beginning to develop the last half of her laugh. It's amazing. Mia, my wife, and I have found each other again and are journeying towards a healthy family with love and mutual respect. So I still don't really know at this point if they're legally married. Not that it matters. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to the world. But I am wondering, like, if after the Vegas wedding, they got married again? I don't know. So that's kind of it. He credits, Shia LaBeouf that is, credits Mia Goth with, quote, saving my fucking life. She was present for me at a time when I didn't deserve to have nobody in my life, especially her. You're damn right you didn't deserve to have anyone in your life. Shape up and fucking act like a decent person if you want people in your life. Not me. I have, like, personal beef with Shia LaBeouf. Personal beef. I know no bounds when it comes to having personal beef with men that I've never met and never will meet. It's something that I excel at. All right, y'all, I think it's time to land this plane, taxi to the gate, and have you all deboard and walk to your destination. Thank you so much for traveling with ObscuraPod Airlines. We appreciate your patronage, as always. Yeah, if you are so inclined, please answer the question in the question box. Tell me about your good omens. If you want to leave me a rating or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, as always, that is, like, literally so appreciated. Or tell a friend about the podcast, share it on your Instagram story, whatever. I have some good episodes in the works, but they require like preparation. Like, I'm currently reading a book for an episode that is really hard to get through. It's a really tough, excruciating read, I would even say. So make sure to follow the show, subscribe to the show so you never miss that episode or any of the upcoming episodes. I'm hoping to get some more guests on in the future, in the near future. So that's what's up. If you made it all the way to the end, thank you so much. I literally love you. I would literally lay my life on the line for you. I love you so much. And I'll be back here same time, same place next week. Follow the pod on Instagram if you're so inclined. The handle is just ObscuraPod. Yeah, and bye. Bye. Bye, guys. See ya. Bye. Bye. Bye, friends.